welcome to the Sabbath Hour. I didn't hear Cheryl, but I guess I'm on. So.
You're on. Yes, I am. I'm here.
Okay. Well, I was wondering because I was going to address you because we talked about trying to create a theme in the show. And yep. If you sent me an email, I did not see it.
Well, you know what? Things got crazy the last part of today, and everything I planned got shot out the window. So I was actually just going to call you. And it got all shot out the window, so I thought, well, I'll just say it right up front.
Well, that's why I'm asking.
Oh, thanks so much. You know, I guess I had one thing in mind, and then the last 30 minutes, everything has changed. So I'm a little heavy in my heart today, and I'm heavy in my heart from watching the interaction between two people that I know and some harsh words that were said to one another, and it distressed me. So I'm coming off of that. And if you can talk about relationships maybe and that whole theme of things, or add that some soothing, comforting something in here for me, I would actually love that.
Well, soothing and comforting, that's just not my style.
Okay, so shoot it right at me then.
Yeah, I'm one of those tough love guys.
Okay. All right. I can take that.
But, you know, the fact is when you feel that pain, after my denouncement of the fact that I will address that, I will continue to address it. But the fact is that we see this all the time. You know, I mean, if you have children, you're going to see them fighting. I was just out at where my grandkids lived, and I heard the little ones inside, and all of a sudden I heard my little granddaughter crying because her brother's picking on her, which he seems to think is his career. The fact is, you know, one minute they're picking on each other, and then the next minute they're getting along. And I don't know. I think about my little granddaughter, whose name actually means battle maid, is going to be really good at forgiving by the time she gets to be an adult because she gets constant practice. So there's always going to be this interaction, and people are going to be upset, and they take things out on each other, and they say things that they shouldn't say. And the fact that it bothers you and you see it, and you have to forgive the pain that you feel when you see that, because evidently they're not forgiving each other. But if you forgive, you bring it into the equation. You actually bring the spirit of forgiveness into the moment. And they'll sense that. They won't necessarily even know where it's coming from. And you don't even have to be in the same room. But this is what prayer is. Prayer has to do with your intent. It doesn't have to do with mouthing words or endless repetitions. It has to do with your intent, what you actually desire for people. And of course, most people pray for things and stuff and not descriptive, undefined happiness. And really, what you really don't want to pray for just happiness, you know, happy, 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 happiness. You want to pray for righteousness. You know, one of them or both of them are wrong if they're in a disagreement. And if they're both angry and saying things, that's really where the facts are irrelevant. The information is irrelevant. It's the spirit that's moving them to this point of anger. And you have to be an anchor of forgiveness that kind of, you know, ties them back to the shore of righteousness. That it doesn't have anything to do with the facts. It has to do with this righteousness. Anytime we judge somebody else with this judgment that brings this anger and resentment and whatever, we're actually playing God. And we're getting in the way of God operating in those people. that are around about us or that we're interacting with. So we have to constantly be seeking this point of repose. When I'll tell you a little story, it's a little bit funnier and a little lighter hearted, but it will show you the principle that's involved. And we have this funny little event down here in the desert called the Mosquito Festival. It takes place in Paisley, Oregon. And it's the biggest thing that happens in Paisley, Oregon, because that's a little tiny town. And every, I think around the end, last week of June or July or something, they have the Mosquito Festival, and they have a parade, and everybody just gets in it and walks down the street, and some people build floats, and some people bring their car, and they have a dance at the end of the day, and they have a kind of a fair and all this stuff. So there are a lot of, they used to have horse pulls, so people would bring horses from all over and, you know, pull logs around and do different things with horses, and then they'd have a rodeo. So it's just kind of a big event. And we had a couple that was bringing their horses in a trailer, a brand-new truck, $40,000 truck probably. Might have been 30 in those days. But anyway, my son and my nephew and my sister and stuff were going down there in another car, and they happened to be passing this car that pulled off on the side of the road, because all of a sudden they saw smoke coming out. And they stopped to see if they could help. And the smoke started billowing out of the hood, and they whipped the hood open, and they couldn't get it out. And Forest Service trucks stopped, you know, fire trucks stopped, and they couldn't get their pumpers going, and none of their fire extinguishers worked. And we thought that was the government wasn't helping at all. But they were trying to evacuate the horses out of the back of the trailer because they thought this truck was just going to totally burn up because they couldn't stop it. And they'd called for assistance from Paisley. And they were just a few miles outside of Paisley. And the Bob Davis, who runs the Chihuahua Can Garage, the only gas station in town, only gas station for about 50 miles, comes out there in one of these old beater tow trucks that, you know, looks like it's out of a 1930s movie or something. And he gets out, and he kind of has a little bit of a limp, and he gets out, and he kind of casually walks over to the fire. Meanwhile, this is all being filmed by my son on a video camera that his grandmother had loaned him. So we see all this taking place on the screen, and it's one of these films where the movie camera is moving back and forth and watching the actions of different people, and the Forest Service can't get their rig started, so we see that going on. People are rushing around getting the horses. We see that. My sister is absolutely panicking and screaming, it's going to blow, and the nephew is running down the road. I mean, he's nearer. The camera would spin around and see the nephew taking off down the road, and then back again at the fire, and then back again at the nephew when he was a half a mile down the road, back again at this thing, and you hear all the screaming and yelling and people running around and this pandemonium. And here comes Bob Davis, pulls up with this old truck, steps out, reaches around the back of the truck, picks up a fire extinguisher, walks over and goes poof, and the flames are out. Whole fire's out. I mean, just a second. He's just casually doing it. He stands there and just kind of stays. Still, people are screaming and running down. Now my nephew's three quarters of a mile down the road. and all of a sudden the flames start up again. Another little poof, and the flames all go out. And he stands there for another minute or so, and it just all settles down. And then he casually, slowly walks back to the tow truck and puts the fire extinguisher in the back, and then slowly turns around and tows the car. There was a lot of hose damage and wire damage, but the car survived everything. The horses all got loaded back up, and everything worked out okay. But there was this total lack of peace and pandemonium, this fear and lack of faith that was, and confusion, and this motor should start. This motor should start. And they kept pulling on it, and they couldn't get it started. And other people were doing whatever the thing, but one person stayed absolutely calm in the face of it. It seemed like the more people panicked around him, the calmer he got. And he had the solution. Now, there were fire extinguishers, I think, on the fire truck, but they never thought about pulling them out because they were trying to get the pump started. They kept trying to get the pump started, and they kept pulling on it, and with the same results, and nothing was changing. And they were fixated on pulling on it, so they never, ever thought, well, wait a minute, we've got a fire extinguisher here in the truck. And so they didn't ever go to that solution. Well, we do the same thing when people get upset around us and they get angry. We get distracted. One of the things that has just been part of my nature for almost a half a century now, at least as far back as I can remember, which is more than half a century, is that when everything gets all panicky around me or people get angry around me, I just get calmer and calmer and calmer. I go to a place inside myself that is at peace. I can see they're distraught. I can see they're angry. I can see they're resentful. But I don't get caught up in their resentment. And I've told this story a bunch of times where I was in Haight-Ashbury during the event when Martin Luther King was shot. And I lived there on the corner of actually, it wasn't Haight-Ashbury. It was Fillmore District. I lived on the corner of Fillmore and Eddy. And there were riots going on in the streets. I had no knowledge of this. I didn't have a TV or a radio. And I'm just walking down the streets, and I was surrounded by at least 100, if not 150, black rioters. And they were very angry at white people at that moment, with Martin Luther having been assassinated. And they were completely surrounding me, and they were very angry. And I looked at them, and I saw their anger. And I saw that their anger caused them to be distraught and upset. And I could see the pain in their eyes, because all the pain of their life was now coming to the surface while they were angry about this event. It was all the pain wasn't just Martin Luther King being killed, but it's all the pain and resentment of their life is now coming to the surface. And this is when people start saying things that they'll regret later. They'll say it to their, you know, their brothers and their sisters and stuff, and all that pain kind of floods out. It's like a, you know, poking a hole in the dam. And you let that water out, and next thing you know, more water's coming out. And next thing you know, everything is just gushing out. And it's because you've let this, you've become involved in this process of releasing anger improperly. And but I didn't get a part of it. I didn't play that game. I didn't react to their anger. I didn't react to their resentment. I just saw it, and I had compassion for it. I forgave them for their anger before I even got angry. You know, most people think forgiveness is, oh, they be mean to you, get angry at them, and then you decide to forgive them. Real forgiveness, they're already forgiven. You're walking around in this pool of forgiveness all the time. You don't take offense, but something happens. You're bringing something else to the equation, some other power, and you don't even know you're bringing it because it's not your power. And they just the angrier they get, the more power comes into the situation. And you know, I tell the end of the story. Literally, I mean, these are like, the crowd was at least 10 people deep all the way across a wide sidewalk and out into the street. And most of them kind of ended up on one side. It was just like a wall of big guys, really big guys. If I had any fear in me and knew what was going on, I might have reacted improperly, but I was absolutely calm. And they just parted. And it looked, I mean, the parting was just kind of amazing. It looked like literally a straight line on the left side and a straight line on the right side. And I think that this event in my life was kind of foreshadowing, showing me something, you know, for my own good. But I tell the story, most people won't believe it anyway. But there was a path opened up through this wall of men. That had to be probably 7-8 feet wide, and you know, 10 men on one side, 10 men on the other, plus all the men that were in the crowd. But the line was absolutely straight. It looked like a military formation. And I just nodded and said something like, good day, and walked right through and kept on walking. If you react to the anger, if you let it upset you, there's some sort of judgment. There's some sort of fear going on. Judgment, fear, same thing. Anger, fear, same thing. It's just different aspects of the same thing. It's just like flipping over a coin. But if you can stay in that forgiveness, forgive them for the anxiety that they're causing. Forgive them for the distress that they're bringing. I mean, instantly forgive them before you're even upset. You can diffuse the thing and actually impart to them seeds of restoration and bring calmness where there is pandemonium and order where there is chaos. But we all have access to that power. It's not a power that's in us. It's a power that comes through us when we live in this forgiveness. You know, I tell people forgiveness works. It really works. I knew a guy who's fairly famous music, I won't mention his name, star, and you know, been all over, and he kind of went on a drug and alcohol rampage and betrayed his wife and all this stuff, and then ended up in this huge depression of guilt. And he was staying at a family's house, and they had asked me to come up and counsel him. And I went up, and the guy is sitting in a room with all the lights off in broad daylight with all the curtains pulled and all the shades pulled. He's not wanting to look at something. He's hiding in the dark. I've seen this more than once with different people. They can't even bear the light. This is hiding. You need to see your own part, your own anger, your own resentment, and forgive yourself first, so that you can forgive others. Because, you know, when you're upset by other people, there's something you're doing wrong. There's something that you're not connected right with those other people. You're not connected quite the way that God wants you connected with them. Because their turmoil is becoming your turmoil. You're feeding their anger and resentment. You're feeding their fear because you've been pulled into it. And a lot of times you're pulled into it because you have a genuine love for those individuals. And you see them hurting each other. But how do you help them? How do you really help them? You have to not need them, not depend on them, not want anything from them, but want to impart that peace that seems to have been robbed from you. It's there. You know, that peace, that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's around us all the time.
Well, but that's where I come from. So it's really good to, you know, have you just kind of blurt all that out and come to that little conclusion right there that, you know, when I see that stuff going on between people, it hurts my heart. And
right.
But, you know, we're all human and we all have our little foibles and things that cause us to stumble. And doesn't change how we feel about the person themselves, you know.
Right. Right. And, you know, and we're so complex creatures, you know, that we can have the absolute best of intentions, but we've tainted it with a little bit of, you know, something from the past or something that's going on in our lives or something. But, you know, God understands that complexity. And even though, you know, a lot of times I've been in situations where I actually became afraid and I thought, you know, I could actually feel my knees shaking a little bit and everything. There was somebody who was trying to mug me once. Same town, as a matter of fact. It was a different street, though. It was down on Powell Street. and they were actually following me. And I realized that. And I knew I was going to be backed into a corner. But I turned and faced them, and they come running around the corner to beat the dark. And I faced them. And to me, I was trembling. But they became afraid. I was trembling because I didn't have enough faith. I knew they were out to get me. And I knew I didn't have too much. It was a pretty deserted street. It was getting dark out there. It was dark by this point. And
lonely.
The little bit of courage that I had, which really wasn't my courage, the really good courage was this courage of being rooted in the faith. And it's not about imagination. It's not about thinking. It's about being that. And that takes a lot of time and learning. But the little bit that was there, even though I was trembling and afraid in myself and thought that I was portraying that fear, evidently to them it was intimidating because they were both bigger than me. As a matter of fact, one was rather big. But they backed away. And there may be other reasons in that, but the fact that I faced danger and had enough courage to do that, it carried with it some sort of effect on what they were about to do. And so even though sometimes we see ourselves getting upset when they're getting upset, it doesn't mean that you aren't having an effect. It just means that your effect could be better if you were, you know, a little bit closer to that kingdom of heaven, that peace place. And, you know, that's the challenge. We're all doing that. Like I said, when I started with my little granddaughter, how she's learning how to deal with that, how to deal with a brother who's a little bit of a bully at times. And the brother is growing a little bit, you know. He's just now getting to be 7, 8 years old, and he's growing and learning. You know, we encourage him along in that learning from time to time that it's not good to be a bully. And hopefully he'll come to the realizations and wake up and understand these things. I'm getting other beeping and phone calls coming in. But anyway, I don't know if that helps, but the fact is there's... Are you there?
It did. It did. It helped a lot.
Okay. It's you know, when you, like I said, when you see your children fighting, your grandchildren fighting now, you know, it's disquieting to some degree. You know, you want them to see the mistake of what they're doing. You desire that. But when you, the more you have faith, the more you have faith in that calm spirit of righteousness, the more you realize they have to go through this. And you can help them go through it by, you know, being in the state of constant forgiveness and giving and patience. You see, those things aren't separate. Just like anger and fear are the same sides, you know, different sides of the same event, so is forgiveness and giving. They're just different sides of the same quality, same spiritual reality. And so you give them your patience, you give them time, and we have to have faith that this will have an effect. They still have free choice, and they may often make the wrong choice. You know, I always tell my kids, and I was just telling one of the brothers that are here working, getting ready for the retreat, that I always told my kids, you can, two ways to learn these lessons, easy or hard. Unfortunately, a lot of people pick the hard way. And so then they have to have these battles. A lot of time is wasted. A lot of energy is wasted. But prayer, that true prayer, it's not repetition of words, but that prayer, when you feel that pain and accept that pain and still hope for the best for that individual to come to the realization of righteousness, that prayer has an effect. And you may not see it right away, but it has an effect. It can part seas, it can calm storms, and it can make an 8-year-old not so darn ornery. That's real power.
That's real power right there. Exactly.
And you're dealing with an 8-year-old, you're going to need all the power you can get.
Exactly. Turbocharged. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. Do you mind if we just take our break here and then and then charge on when we get back?
Okay.
That good?
That sounds good to me.
Okay. Well, thank you all for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio today. This is Cheryl. I'm your host for the next two and a half hours. Val Volano is going to join me at 4 o'clock, so stay tuned for the news about her upcoming shows. Thank you very much for tuning in, and if you'd like to call in, please feel free, 347-324-3704. See, I just brought my little issue right here to Brother Gregory, and look what I got. I'm very blessed. Thank you so much, sir.
You betcha.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Greetings. This is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again, as I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Hey guys, tune into the Heated Conversation hosted by me, Vicky. UFOs, GMOs, and chemtrails, oh my. We talk about anything and everything as long as it's hot. So call in and join the discussion live Thursday nights, 10:30 to midnight, and Friday nights, 9 to midnight Pacific. Only on FreedomizerRadio.com.
I like that new commercial, Vic. Good job.
Hey Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative. Weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
So that is Proof Negative, the boss man here at Freedomizer Radio. So thank you to Proof again for allowing us to have a place to speak our minds. There are a couple of new shows. I was going to play some of our regular commercials. I'm going to pop in some impromptu commercials for some new things that are coming up. Truth Exposition with Valerie Ann on Saturday and Sunday at 7:30. We have new shows starting at 9 o'clock next week. Tammy and Austin will be bringing you Guerrilla Radio at 9 o'clock on Monday and Wednesday next week. And Val Volano will be bringing us her new shows right after those. So she'll be following Guerrilla Radio. So thank you very much for tuning in, and I appreciate that very much. So thank you, Brother Gregory, for holding my hand there for a minute.
Yeah, it's not usually my style. I'm not. I'm usually whacking people over the backside of the head.
Well, you know, whatever your style is, it really didn't matter. It really didn't matter. You know, and that's one of the things, you know, that I do here at Freedomizer Radio. I'm kind of real about what's going on with me, and I kind of follow these little paths, and the little path that I was going to go to on my show at 4 o'clock was to talk about anger and how anger affects us spiritually, emotionally, physically. And so that's what's been on my mind for the last couple of days that I didn't get any resolution for.
Well, you know, anger is a powerful tool of evil to keep us cut off from God. Again, that anger is, judgment, and it's, we get in the way, we get in the wrong place. And actually, you know, our morning shows were, the theme was, does God hate you? Because it tells us in the Bible that God hates Esau. It says that he hates the deeds of the Nicolaitans, and he hates the error of Balaam. All those things are actually the same thing. But then, of course, we also say that God doesn't hate like we hate, because God is God. He has a right to judge us. You know, has a right, you know, he talks about, you know, if they elect this Saul, that there'll come a day when you cry out, and he says, I will not hear you in that day, because you've, you know, chosen to turn away and reject God. But by the same token, he always gives us the opportunity of repentance, in which case he says, I will hear you, and I will send you shepherds. He also says that when you don't hear him, he will send you foolish shepherds that will cause you to eat your young and eat your children. And we've talked about all that this morning, so we won't go over that again, except for the fact that we do that. We've created a society in which we are in a runaway debt system that is literally devouring everything our children will ever do because of this huge debt that's climbing up. And we're putting them into bondage. So we're literally doing that today, eating our children. But he also gives us a way out. He gives us a way to turn around and go the other way and end the storm that's coming. We may not be able to end it for everybody, but we certainly should be able to end it for ourselves if we really repent and turn around and go another way. So we have to understand what way we were going wrong. We have to be willing to look at that in the light and admit it, and then do something about it. We won't be able to do enough. But if we're willing to turn around, admit our error, and go the right way, God will do the rest. And with this awesome amount of power, you know, that can change the face and part seas and calm storms and turn hurricanes around and do all kinds of wondrous things. But we have to do something. We have to take a step in that other direction, away from being God ourselves, ruling over our neighbor, exercising authority one over the other. The more, if we were really willing to change and go this other way, and willing to give up our life for the well-being of others, you know, it may hurt a little bit. When we do that, it may be difficult at times when we do that. You know, it's the old, the father spanking his kids. And, of course, I'm not encouraging people to spank their kids. I don't ever think that a parent should give up their right to spank their kids. But every time they have to spank their kids, most of the time it's because they failed being a good parent before. But they still may have to do it from time to time. But they used to always say, this is going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt me, or hurt me more than it's going to hurt you. And in some ways it does. To discipline our children, it sometimes is hard to do. It's hard to say, you know, you shouldn't be this way. You're disappointing me. And even if it's just a scolding, it feels bad to have to face that failing. But if we face it righteously, with patience and love, it's an endurable pain that is actually the pain of prayer. You know, Christ, when he was praying in the garden, he was sweating blood. That's what they say. That sounds like it was pretty darn painful, but it was prayer. And so there, what it is, is that we see people are angry because they're not willing to face something, see something, accept something. And so they get angry and they'll lash out at other people because they don't want to admit it's their problem. It must be these other people's problem. And we always hurt the ones we love. We'll often lash out at our wife or our husband because of the fact that we can get away with it with them. Somebody else might just knock our block off. And we have this anger that's pent up inside us that we want to release. And that's why I said, we're releasing anger improperly, because you have this burden. You're carrying around this anger, this resentment. You know, there used to be an old commercial where the father comes in and is all mad and upset and says, can't you keep Billy's bike out of the driveway? And he's all upset. Well, the fact is Billy's bike is always in the driveway. He's upset because his boss picked on him, because he didn't get the sale, because, you know, the traffic was bad. And, of course, the commercial is, you know, sure you got a headache, but don't take it out on her. Take whatever pill that they want to sell you. But the fact is, we get angry, we get resentful, we get frightened in our lives, we get anxiety, and we do have a tendency to release the pressure of that by taking it out on somebody else. You know, it'd be better if you took it out on a punching bag or something like that, but, you know, that's what was really good if it's never there, if it's actually released the way it should be released. And that takes us back to forgiveness works. Forgiveness will drain away that anger. It'll just take it away like a tide going out. Just washes it out away from you because you're actually forgiving. And you're letting it go. It's easier to forgive wrongs that are done to you, because there are wrongs that are done to you, if we actually believe that God will take care of it. But a lot of people don't really believe God will take care of it, so they think, I got to take care of it. I got to be angry. I got to make things right. You have to do what God is leading you to do, and He's not leading you to be angry. He's leading you to see things that are sometimes painful and difficult. And that's what we talked about that last week. Everybody should go back and listen to last week's show. The cognitive dissonance of our brains when we come face to face with a fact that is uncomfortable. It doesn't fit into what we want to believe is true. And we have to say, oh my gosh, what I thought before is not right. Now I either have to dismiss the truth or accept the truth and admit that I didn't have as much of the truth as I thought I had before. And most people decide to dismiss the truth. But I tell you, accept the truth, see the truth, seek the truth, seek the, you know, this is righteousness. This is, you're bearing false witness to yourself when you deny the truth. You have to always be willing to look at your error. And of course, most people are willing to look at other people's error. So I don't need to remind them of that. But the errors that we're committing in society, and we've committed a lot of them in society, and we talk about a lot of them on this show, you know, our move towards socialism, extremely bad plan, very Nicolaitan in nature, very Balaam in nature. And God hates that. He wants you to take care of one another, but He wants you to do it with free will offerings. Big difference from what we see almost everywhere in the world. And everywhere in the world we see climbing debt and collapsing economies. All this is due to the fact that we don't practice giving and forgiving enough. I mean, we invade whole countries because we can't forgive. Millions of people die because we can't forgive. You know, if we could start getting back to forgiveness and giving, and you don't have to start with a huge amount of giving. Just start the flow in the other direction. Instead of sucking the life out of everybody around you, start giving it. One of the ways to give is to forgive, to be patient. It really will change your life physically. It will allow an energy of life to flow through you. Whenever you're judging other people, you know, with this angry judgment, you're eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. You don't want to eat of that tree. You want to eat of the tree of life. And that tree of life will give you more life. And you can start very small, you know, with just, you know, little slices of forgiveness. Think about it. Sit still in a room. I talked about this a number of weeks ago, this ancient form of meditation where you just sit still. And you don't try to do anything except for be quiet. And you be aware of yourself sitting there. And thoughts will come up. You know, what this person said, what that person said, what this person did. You know, and when you get back to the fourth grade and you see all those things that were done to you, you're making progress. You know, you're actually seeing what you refused to see before. Start accepting the responsibility for the mistakes you make, for the inadequacies of yourself. Don't beat yourself up. Forgive yourself first. Remember I said that earlier. And then start working on forgiving others. And you won't be very good at it at first. you'll say, oh, yeah, I forgive them. And then next week you'll be thinking of that same thing that they did that you said you forgave them last week. Well, forgive them this week. Get better and better at it. As little Kelly is getting better and better at forgiving her brother, you have to get better and better at forgiveness too. It will start to change your life. It will change the energy in your life. It will change the people around you who are stumbling around in a world of darkness. And they will begin to see, you know, I was mean to so-and-so. I was cruel to so-and-so. And they'll see it because there's light in the room. There's light in their life. It's not their light. It's your light. You saw it. And they see it. How many times have you seen in the course of your life where you see somebody do something and they become aware that you saw them do it? And they're not even looking at you. They just know. Some, you know, you get the hair on the back of your neck. Somebody's watching. Somebody's looking at me. And, you know, I've caught people numerous times committing crimes. And I'm kind of walking around in a daze a lot of the time because I'm thinking about this thing or that thing. But all of a sudden, something will catch my attention, and it will draw my attention over here, and I'll see somebody do something that they're trying, and the more they're trying to hide it, the more likely it is I'll catch it. And just the fact that I see it brings it into the light of their consciousness. They begin to notice, especially things that are habitual. They begin to notice, and they become conscious of themselves because I'm conscious. Now, you have to do that without judgment, without anger, without resentment. And then the light of you seeing this, just seeing it, peaceably, calmly seeing that they're making a mistake here. They're sucked into a situation of crime. Stealing money was a common thing out of cash registers. I don't know how many times I caught people doing that. And I don't even mention it. I don't even bring it up to them. But I saw it, and they know it. And they know I saw it eventually. And they're conscious of it, and they feel bad. I mean, I could tell you story after story of people who came back to me and apologized for what they did wrong when it had nothing to do with me. It was something they were doing completely separate from me. But they came over and apologized to me. But I don't think we have time for all those stories. So, what time is it? Okay.
No.
Well, I can tell you one of them. One of them, it was when I was in the military. And I was only in the military briefly, and then they asked me to leave. I wasn't dishonorably discharged or anything. They actually voided my induction. They said it was a mistake. But I had some fascinating adventures while I was in there. It was during the Vietnam War. And I learned a huge amount from different people and the interaction of people and that whole power structure that you see in the military and where the power really is at. But this one situation, there was a guy in the 4th platoon. I was 3rd platoon. And a guy in the 4th platoon, he was a big black guy with a big, you know, his neck was thicker than my waist, I think. I mean, he was a powerful guy, very strong guy. And he come from, you know, a rough background. And there were lots of fights in the 4th platoon. I mean, I saw the ambulance show up there numerous times, and sometimes he was in the middle of it. And everybody was afraid of him because he was really kind of a tough guy. That was just a little bit after the Watts riots and everything. But to me, he was just another guy, you know. I didn't know. I had no resentment or anger towards anybody. And so I didn't think of anything. But anyway, one day we were standing in line to get milk at the mess hall. And he cuts in front of everybody and gets this milk. Now, I didn't know who he was at that time. And you didn't cut in the Army. You know, everybody, you know, hurry up and get their stuff and don't get in front of me. But he did, and nobody said a thing. And I looked at it, I saw them do that, and I looked at other people, and they were all looking down because they didn't want to say anything to Wilson because he was too tough. He'd beat you up or break your arm or something. But I didn't understand that process of fear, and so I thought maybe the guy was from Jamaica or something, and he didn't understand English or something. So I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, you know, you should wait in line. I didn't say it with that inflection. I just said it like, you know, there's a line here. You know, you're supposed to wait in line, kind of thing. Very innocent. And thinking that he must just not understood. I didn't think he was cutting. And so anyway, he turned around, but he looked at me when I said it, and I said it just so casually. He looked at me and had this kind of angry look when he came turned around. And he just looked at me and stared at me, and he just got peaceful, and then he left. And he already had his milk, so he went off to eat. Guys tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, man, don't talk to him. That's Wilson. He'll break your neck. You know, he'll kill you. You know, all this kind of stuff. And I thought, like, why? You know, it just didn't fit into my thinking that there was anything to be afraid of. I couldn't understand that. I didn't understand the anger and stuff that people would have at that time. But anyway, like 4 or 5 days later, a week later or something like this, I end up not getting in with my regular platoon. I'm coming in with and I run down to get in with my platoon, and they're already in, and now 4th platoon is waiting for mess hall. And so I can't go in. So I go I start turning around, and I start heading to the back of the line of the 4th platoon, because they're not being let in yet, to get in the back of the line and take my meal back there. Well, the guy in the very front row of the 4th platoon is Wilson again. He's in the front of the line, very front of the line. And he says, hey, man, you can get in front of me. And I didn't even recognize him. You know, the incident didn't mean anything to me. And like I said, I'm usually walking around kind of in an oblivious state, don't recognize people. And I said, no, that's okay. I'll get in the back of the line. And I walked to the back of the line, which is an entire platoon. Guess what? I'm standing there in the very back. There's actually two lines, but it's all the same. And I'm standing in the very back of the line, and Wilson leaves the front of the line, goes all the way to the back of the line, and stands next to me in the other line. And I still haven't recognized him yet. You know, there's so many faces. I didn't know. And he says, hey, man, you know, you're a really good guy, you know, and everything. If you need any help and all this stuff. And I'm looking at him like, did I know you? I'm trying to think, you know, where I've seen this guy before. And I'm looking at him, and I read the name. You had the names on your uniforms. So
right.
I read the name, and I said, Wilson, I remember. Oh, I remember you. from the milk line. I didn't mention that. He's then offering to beat up anybody who gives me trouble. And I'm thinking in the back of my mind, I have to be careful who I look at funny. This guy's going to go and beat the tar out of him if I even so much as frown at somebody. But I thought it was amazing. Here's the guy everybody is afraid of and afraid to upset and afraid to make angry because he is such a terror. He is the gentlest, sweetest little guy you can imagine. He wants to help out. He wants to be friendly. Left the front of the line, came back, and waited all the way until everybody else had eaten, and him and I were the last ones to go in. And we were like, we really didn't have anything in common. We weren't buddies after that or anything, but, you know, how did that happen? Why did that happen? I tell you, forgiveness works. It is a tremendous power when you really forgive. Remember, darkness is the absence of light. And forgiveness is a thing of the light. Giving is a thing of, give up your life so you can have life more abundant. What kind of ridiculous paradox is that? But it's true. And every mother should be able to tell you that. That's true. But we have to do it not just with cute little children. You have to do it with, you know, the ugly ones, too, which are all the other people around us. And people can get very ugly. You know, they can get very mean, very angry. And
I think that often comes comes from having been hurt themselves.
Right.
And
it's fear.
And fear. Exactly. Exactly.
They're afraid of being
hurt again. What it's really weird, you know, I'm going to say something because it really struck me. You know, I only said one little thing at the very beginning, and an hour later, almost an hour later, it feels like you've been like a fly on the wall in my life. And because and the reason that it is because that what you're speaking is such deep truth that it permeates and can it fits. It fits when you're actually looking at things, and I felt a disharmony in my heart. And one of the things that we talked about, you know, a couple of weeks ago, cognitive dissonance, is some of the ways that people figure out how to get rid of that disharmony when it comes into their life, it comes into their energy field. And thank you for helping me to make this would be the whole thing of why I'm supposed to be here today.
Well, I don't know, something about you, Cheryl, you just draw it out of me. So I think, you know, I do feel a rapport with you when I talk to you, and occasionally I get to listen to the show, the second half when I download the archives. But you know, the fact is there are certain things in all of us, and that's what we have to forgive the unrighteous. You know, the stories in ancient history where we see where someone is persecuting or martyring somebody, killing somebody, torturing them even, and then because of the forgiveness of the individual who's forgiving his torturer, the torturer becomes a convert to the faith. He realizes that he is changed. And it's a perfect example. Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker.
Go for it.
Say again?
I say go for it.
Yeah. Anyway, Darth Vader, you know, there he is. It's evil. There's no good in him. There is still good in him, you know, Luke believes it. And finally, you know, when Darth saves his son and defies the Emperor because there was still love in him, just a tiny little bit. You have to remember that evil, again, is the absence of good. We talk about evil flooding in. You know, I used that analogy earlier, evil flooding in, anger flooding in. Anger doesn't really exist. It's the vacuum. The problem is we're not plugging into forgiveness. When you plug into forgiveness, righteousness, the light can flood in, and it's the darkness that goes away. And this is what, you know, this is what happened, you know, supposedly in the story of Darth Vader, which is not really real, but the reason everybody loved that story is there was a lot of truth in principles in that, is that when Luke says, I must save you, and Darth says, you already have. And he saved him because he forgave his father. He was constantly forgiving his father. He constantly had hope for his father. And the evil emperor was constantly trying to draw him into the dark side of the force by making him angry and resentful. And even Darth was playing that game, you know, going to turn the sister and got him to be angry. And then he wouldn't do it. You know, I mean, this battle... You know, I don't know if Lucas could understand the story as well as he wrote it, but I think everybody's allowed to have one divine inspiration. I think that there was tremendous truth in that story. But we should, you know, I have to go back. I guess the theme is forgiveness works. And God doesn't hate you. He hates the deeds of the Nicolaitan. As soon as you turn away from those deeds and do the deeds of Christ, which are forgiveness. You know, I talked about, you know, this eating of flesh, eating of the flesh of our children. You know, we're not to eat flesh with blood in it. Because why? Because the blood is the life. The life is the blood. We're not to eat the life of our neighbor. And then they talk in the Bible, and we went through all these different quotes this morning, of the, you know, where it talks about this life that we begin to eat from our neighbor, and devouring our neighbors. When we turn away and go the other way, where we will really go hungry rather than eat of our neighbor. And, you know, actually this morning I began a fast. I've been fasting all day, actually since last night, and I'm going without eating food. But it's really fasting from anger that we need to do, fasting from unforgiveness that we need to do. And then what happens, you know, selfishness, fasting from selfishness. And how do you do that? You, by giving. And the more you do that, the more this other energy, this spiritual energy, can start to flow through you. And then you become a powerful wall where people can't make you angry. They try, but they can't make you angry. They can't offend you. They can't embarrass you. They can't even upset you. They can cause pain. They may kill the body, but they cannot kill the spirit of forgiveness and righteousness. And that's what we're supposed to be seeking. And, you know, having children and trying to gather together with other people gives us great opportunities to practice our forgiveness skills. Because people are always going to be stepping on our toes or cutting in line for milk or something like that. But I tell you, it can have tremendous power if you live and dwell in that forgiveness and love. I mean, what is, you can't love without forgiveness. You can't love without giving. I mean, not real love. You know, you can lust without giving. You can lust without forgiving, but you cannot love without it. And so that's the message of today. Anyway, say again.
I said, oftentimes I sit here and listen to you, and I'm not sitting there consciously thinking of things, because you're one of the people that I allow into my subconscious, just downloading directly.
Ooh, that's scary.
Oh, now you know, Brother Gregory's got me. He'll be downloading all kinds of weird stuff next week. I can hear it now.
Well, maybe you'll get up to the retreat this September. We can actually see. You won't just be a voice on the phone.
That would be so nice, wouldn't it?
It'd be pleasant. Yeah. So anyway, but we're at the end of another hour, so.
Well, I know we deviated a little bit from your regular structure of your show. So thank you very much for this impromptu hand-holding.
My whole life is impromptu. This is the way it works. I think it'll make for a lot better show because it's alive. It's real. It's real
that's
people
right.
Talking about real things. And that's what we need. So I think it was great. I had a lot of fun.
Good. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you've been listening to Brother Gregory on the Sabbath Hour, and we're going to take a break. We'll be back. So thank you very much, sir.
Yeah. God bless you, Cheryl.
God bless you too, sir.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.